In the beginning, there was nothing. Then there were comic books. Once you enter our world, there is no escape. Comic exposure begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Comic Exposure Podcast. My name is Josh, and with me is, my friend bent on revenge, seeking the blood of his enemies, the one, the only.
I'm going back to Cali, Travis Ratz here.
Welcome to the podcast where Travis Ratz and I dive deep into graphic novels and trades, or we talk about what's going on in the world of nerddom. Today, you're on a comic book club episode where Travis Ratz and I read a story of vengeance, a Dark Horse comic, Cali, written by Daniel Friedman, illustrated by Robert Samelin, with lettering by Michael David Thomas. Travis, what is this Dark Horse book about? I mean, it said it's about revenge. Is it about anything else than revenge?
Escaping
and revenging.
Escaping and revenging and large systems of power. Let's say fascism.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, we're going to have a conversation. So I think these are our September conversations, Travis Ratz. We have two books that we're doing.
I know, I wish there was a great pun to have with the word genre in September. If it was November.
Do you remember the genre fill time in September? Travis and I are reading two kind of very genre heavy books in September. Both with a strong female protagonist, that's secondary to this conversation around the tropes and the trappings and just the kind of narrow path you give yourself sometimes in genre fiction. And so this first one is a tale of vengeance, a sort of, if you threw John Wick, Kill Bill, and Mad Max in a blender, right? I think that's the in a touch of like
I got one. I got
Nazism
got one
that, in there.
I got one that is the crux of how I view this.
Okay,
this is Snake Plissken, female Snake Plissken.
Oh yeah.
And I'll talk about that further.
Yeah,
about this subgenre of science fiction dystopian world, but yeah, I wanted to add that into your list of
you're right. It feels very escape from New York, escape from LA, that sort of,
but in a way I want to talk about that.
Yeah,
I think is
yeah
maybe easier to pull off in film than comics, and I want to talk to you about why. And then in your intro,
yeah,
as you were saying things down, I have a question that okay. I want to ask you.
All right, so
that I want to start this in this episode,
yeah,
but then I want to finish in our next episode.
Okay, so do you want to ask a question now, or do you want to dive into the book a little bit?
We could ask the question now, and right, let it like simmer.
Yeah,
let it simmer in there.
Yeah.
So you mentioned something
like a good stew
about genre pieces, action genre pieces, both of them with a strong female protagonist, right? And we see that a lot in genre, especially like sci-fi dystopian genre. And I don't even know how I want to phrase this question, but does having a female protagonist as the lead of your genre story, does that open up possibilities that not having a female lead and having a male lead?
I think I think if anything else, I think it plays with expectations more. Does that make sense? Like, I feel like you think of so the Hunger Games, right? Female protagonist, dystopian sci-fi future. It lets you kind of subvert in this very brutal landscape, the juxtaposition of brutal action and the trappings of like female femininity in that. Right. That idea of like, you know, the the rose in the desert, right? You know, one of those pieces. I think, like, why is Kill Bill so fantastic, right? Because you have you're bending that revenge tale, is bending those sort of old Japanese samurai films that you've been wronged, you're out for it, but we flipped it on its head by making it a female protagonist instead of a male protagonist. But it allows you to play with moments of I think sexuality different and sure. A couple other things to kind of subvert those and take what you would normally consider a male, I think culturally in America, what has been considered vengeance being a very male focused thing,
emotion,
anger, violence, and you get to flip those and have them be a woman, which at this point, I don't know how like genre bending it is because we've done it for a long time, yeah. You know? But I think it lets you play with, and I think in the art world, and I know I'm talking a lot, but I think in art, it lets you play with shape differently.
Right? Well, that's a huge thing there. Like the female form and fashion and things like that, which is a huge part of this book when we get to the visuals of it.
Yeah.
And there's no way you can answer this question because you can't speak for the subconscious of male creators everywhere. But as you were talking, I was listening to what you were saying. And I also, what struck me is, do you think when it comes to genre pieces written or created primarily by males who have female protagonists, do you think in some ways, subconsciously, there is a shortcut being like, no, this is how off the rails things have gotten? When even the idea of femininity, as we have known it in the previous century, is now in this form. Do you think they're using it sometimes as a shortcut to?
I think it can show you how, and maybe it's just that idea for a writer to show you it's so brutal that even the gangs are, you know, they're all women gangs, especially when you're jumping that dystopian future.
Yeah.
I think, and I don't want to throw it back to
violence has gone non-binary in these genre pieces.
And I also think you take this idea of, like the idea of that no one's safe. If you think about just gender norms of who we want to protect, right? In just American culture in general, that very puritanical piece of it, that you think of, this is a world where there is no protection for you know, what.
Yeah,
that's
what I was thinking with that shortcut. I don't know if it's conscious. I don't know if they're like, well, this will be like one rhetorical approach in showing just how off the rails things are. But I also think there's
part of it where you're like, it's pretty hot to see a chick beat the shit out of people, right? Like there's that piece of it too, right? Like
Charlize Theron has made a career out of it.
Right. Yes. Right. And so you go, okay, yeah, okay, I get it. Or Uma Thurman and all those pieces where you take this live, sexy female and make her just kick ass, right? That's all this book is. And I don't mean to shortchange Callie.
I don't think we are. It was, and maybe I should ask that question at the end, but as you hinted at, both our books have strong female protagonists. So it is a connecting feature of those. So Callie, this book, it's like a post-apocalyptic world. It's run by a government organization known as the Machine, like basically, which I feels like a stand-in for Nazis, especially the way that they dress the people working for the
government. Or like
government
Russia. Machine. You know what I mean? It's very so there's a
it's Rocky IV.
Yeah, it's like the female antagonist who is like the governor's daughter, right? Is that
Governator's?
Yeah, the governor's daughter. She's very. It reminds me of the Brigitte Nielsen.
Indiana Jones.
Brigitte Nielsen in Rocky IV, or the female in Last Crusade, right? That very sort of
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
She's in the Nazi uniform and you're like,
yeah,
okay, okay, all right. Like that, that's very yeah. like, yeah.
And torture and like all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically it opens on the, on this world, and without getting too much into the details, which we can talk about what that makes the story, but, Callie is part of this, like you said, the term Mad Max post-apocalyptic gang. Biker gang of females. Yeah. And we enter the story where she has been what she feels like betrayed by her gang, and, has been captured, and now she has to go, as you also mentioned in the opening, on a quest for revenge while escaping her captors and constantly being put into these conflicted situations.
Yeah. And look, the opening to this, so I don't, again, I don't want to shortchange the book, but this is essentially a spot on storyboard for a film. Like it truly, it, and I know that we talk about this sometimes in this art form, that sometimes when we read some of these indie books, it feels a little bit like, oh, this is for a project, right? Like this is first pass at something. This read really quickly. It read very fast. It starts in medias res, and it has a fantastically cinematic opening sequence. Right. You start in the middle of her. You see like that very first page is, it reminds me of Mad Max when he steps on the lizard and crushes it with his heel in the Mad Max movie. But it's her walking handcuffed, blood dripping down her arm. And you're like, OK. And then you see the knife in her back as she's chain gang together. The only woman in this chain gang, right? And she stands out because she's in the black leather. Everyone else is in the brown, gray desert fatigue. It is, again, just this very cinematic look.
Yeah, it's like a yeah, yeah, yeah song opened up a movie. and now, what's interesting you said that is it's Daniel Friedman, right? Mm-hmm. I believe is the writer of this one. I think he actually typically does art on stuff. Anyways, I was listening to an interview with him, and you mentioned the idea of storyboarding. And in this interview, he said something interesting. He said that storyboarding is very different than comic book paneling. And I was like, oh, okay. And then he started talking about it, and he says something really interesting about like the ability for storyboarding and film. You know, you can play with time between scenes, but in comics, you have even more liberty to play with time from panel to panel. Meaning like you could have one panel over here and then the next panel takes place 100 years later. And there's something with that medium that allows that to be even more forgiving than in film. But here we have, I completely agree with you, where it feels like the paneling in this, the opening in a lot of this book feels like we're storyboarding shots.
The action sequences in particular feel very like it's done very well. The art is very good. That's part of the reason why I wanted to read it, because it looks great.
It's fantastic. Color, it's a beautiful book.
The coloring is great. But there's a panel
when... And also, like, when you say coloring great, it is, like, in our, like, our... Like, if you color a book like this, you're getting, 80% in coloring, a minimum from Josh and Travis Comic.
It's this weird
barbecue
sauce desert coloring, right?
We might have to, like, trademark barbecue coloring.
So it starts with the whole action sequence at the beginning starts with her kicking this guy's desk over, right? Like, full-on donkey kicking, like, mule kicking his desk. And then it breaks into the barbecue sauce paneling, where it is it slows down time in the moment of the fight, right? Like headbutting him in the face, pulling, like he pulls the knife out of her back. She hits him. She grabs the knife, guts him with it, like grabs the key, all these pieces, unlocks her cuffs, throws the knife, hits the dude in the forehead, all of it real quickly, right? All before he gets the call off for help. And then it's like, then he gets to do that thing where, well, now I'm gonna bend time. I'm gonna go through this sequence and chop it down. And then he jumps into the way it's written is like, oh, and then she's bandaging herself up. Battle's over. Yeah. She's still in the office. Two dead guys in the office as she's doing this. So I think he's right in what you're saying, that you do get to play with time a little bit more, but in those specific sequences, it is very like, it feels very beat to beat of how the action is going to roll, right?
I'm going to throw out something here and you can tell me if I'm completely off base, but if we're talking to people who we're talking about this book kind of vaguely, but I would say for me, the pinnacle of this book, and if you want to read it, it is because of the action sequences,
yeah,
and how they flow and how they work on there, in the sense of like, ooh, this is good comic book action. Not even good. This is like premium comic book
action. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the art style and the pacing is super fast. Sometimes we read books that drag. Sometimes we read books that fly by. This is a flyby book where there's panels where there is no dialogue for pages, right? And then your dialogue is very sparse. It's less about... So I think this is...
Also, action here too. Very sparse backgrounds when the action's happening. We let that be light a lot of times, or very limited backgrounds, to really focus on the anatomy of the characters and their movements and the action and flow of those movements.
Right. And I think that plays a really important piece to this. And so I think what... I think the discussion I kind of want to have about genre is its limitations, but also is this the best medium for a story like this?
Okay. Can I jump in here?
Yeah.
This is you just like teed me up for, as I was reading this, what it reminded me of and the challenges of doing that in comic book form. So as I said, the Escape from New York, Escape from LA movies, right?
Yeah.
We throw this character named Snake Plissken in there. It's not about characterization at all. He has to get someone out of someplace. He has to escape, right? It's escape. Escape from, yeah. It's literally in the title of it, which is very similar to like what our character is good at, escaping. There's a reason why handcuffs are on the cover of this, book. I believe they are on the cover of this book. And you see lots of handcuffs in there, and she's been chained up and she's been tied down. She gets this and she escapes, very much like the character Snake Plissken. Characters, and also very similar to those movies, is there's always a hint at a much more character-based past. Snake Plissken, like the big thing in those two movies is like the Cleveland. What about what happened in Cleveland? They always reference Cleveland.
Yeah,
we never get to see it. And we meet people that be like, you screwed me over in Cleveland. We don't get to know about that. And that very much reminded me of this book, where it's a sense of like, oh, it was this job you screwed me over on, or like we had this set up and then you didn't do that, but we never get to know it. So it's not about characters.
No.
And so.
Well, it's not about character growth. It's about a specific, like, character, right?
Character,
in this unknowable person, but it's less about characterization and story.
The character's goal is vengeance, and that is the driving thing of it, right? In the Escape from New York movies, it's about him saving his life. He's like, oh, I've been poisoned, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But here is where this genre, to use your word, and we're probably going to use a lot, this is what comic books, at least at to this point that I haven't seen, can do, that movies can do. For those type of movies where it's like extremely action-based and more emotional character-based than building up who a character is, soundtracks. The soundtrack to this type of genre really add so much in the cinematic thing. And in this case I'm talking about is like John Carpenter, right?
Yeah.
Or the Mad Max, scores on here, where it's like the thing for this type of genre that comics can't do as singularly as film is give you that driving beat to the emotional motivation that is basically the plot of the story.
Yeah.
That makes sense?
Yeah. No, I think you're right. And this is, she's kidnapped or captured or beat the crap out of so many times in this book. And this this story is not about learning about her really, or other people. It's about the drive. It is a road trip, but it's not a road trip. You know what I mean? It has that trapping of a road trip story, but instead of it being a road trip to learn about each other, it's a road trip to just like beat the shit out of the character and everybody around them. Right.
Yeah.
So you have that, and it's about putting them, it's this genre. And I think movies like Escape from LA, Escape from New York, movies like John Wick are less about learning about the world fully. You get sprinkles of it. It's less about learning about the character, and it's more about how do we get them from point A set piece that's going to be cool for a fight to point B set piece that's going to be cool for a fight to point C set piece. And this bounces from action set piece to action. There's a whole like desert shoot 'em up exploding scene where she has like a sniper rifle and bombs and like grenades set up and all this stuff. And then it flashes to another scene where she's been captured and she's being tortured. And then a scene where she has to like the golden gun that she's going to be shot with, like all of this stuff back to back to back to back.
Yeah. And like I said, it is this sense of, we watch those movies cinematically to stay with a character in a less than comfortable emotion that we want to be in. So I don't know. It's like, let's say it's 160 pages here. It's like, how do we stay in that very human emotion, but one that we don't celebrate and one that we try to circumnavigate of vengeance? How do we follow a character through the ebbs and flows of that emotion? We're less concerned about her background story or her connection to all the characters, but more about is, how is she navigating that emotion of vengeance? When does it peak? How does the action show us that? And then where does she get conflicted with it? Because there are moments in this where Callie second guesses herself. In fact, I would say the ending is a huge second guess on the emotional drive for vengeance based on her perception of her perceived past.
Right. Did
you read that the same way I did? I also questioned my reading of that.
She's coming up against her sister, right? And so vengeance is like
her sister?
Yes. So vengeance is her sister's part of the gang. They're like, yeah, they both have the matching dot. That's how you're supposed to know that they're.
I thought that was like a makeup thing they put them on there.
Not all of them have it. Just like her and.
Okay. So I believe you. I was like, I'm not reading this right.
That's why she's so mad. Is she can't believe not only did her gang sell her out, but her sister did. And so she's seeking vengeance on everybody. And then she gets to the end when the last person left to kill is her sister. She's about to die, right? She's been poisoned. That happened. That's the Snake Plissken of it, right? Like earlier on, she's poisoned. She has to like, she has limited time left to fulfill her vengeance. And she goes to finally do the part where she gets to kill her sister. She attempts to do it. She can't. She walks away, and I assume she dies.
Okay. At the very end. So this kind of changes a little bit of things on here, and it kind of makes me think of, I like a lot of this book. It's too short of a time period to tell the story I think you want to tell. When you think of Kill Bill, right? It's all set out like, I'm going to kill Bill. It's set out in like the first 10 minutes in the vocal narration by Uma Thurman.
Yeah.
Right. And then we find out, oh no, I actually have a child with Bill. right? So this idea of the sister adding to the complication of that vengeance, I don't know, maybe that should be in there earlier. Or maybe it's just visually was, and I just didn't pick up on it.
Well, they don't tell you why until near the very end where they do that flashback. Right.
Yeah.
So you're like, man, her team's out to get her. They want to sell her out. But then they do the flashback where you see Callie's the leader of the gang. They're voting whether or not to join the machine. And the young girl is like, we join the machine.
I don't know.
She's like, I think I want to join him. And so she shoots her. She goes, I remember now. I couldn't remember.
Exactly. That was weird.
Yeah. So she voted against me, so I shot her. And so you're like, oh, she's brutal and terrible too. She's not been following this. We've been following. And that's the part that's a little weird to me is that we've been following this character, rooting for this character because you're like, oh, man, they sold her out. They want to join the fascist whatever. I can't like that. There's something wrong with that gang. Why would they do that? And then you get this weird flashback that feels very it feels very Tarantino. Right. Like, let's not tell you this key piece of information until late in the film. Right. And then you're like, oh, she's terrible. She did something terrible. Why have I been rooting for her this entire time?
There's no device like, oh, she was so traumatized by the violence that memory has just gone. You know, as a reader, we can make that assumption like, oh, like she's been beat the hell up. Of course she can't remember things correctly. But showing your hand a little bit more on that might make that connection a little bit better.
Yeah. I think again, just what this does well is it's visually striking. The action sequences are great. It really gives a pace. You're right. It lacks. What I need to do is I need to turn on some like music from a John Woo film, like a very 90s, industrial soundtrack, right? And just with a thumping thing, maybe it's some Ministry, some Filter in there where they're just like going through. So, and I read it super fast and I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. I thought that was going to be longer. All right. Okay. I blasted through this and it is a ride. It is a, how else, like, okay. So
I think, I think what you're saying here too, go ahead. So please, I interrupted.
No. Have you ever been like, have you ever been to like, you've been to Disneyland, you've been to Universal Studios, right? Where like you're on a curated ride, right? Let's talk Pirates of the Caribbean. You hop on.
Can we make it the Indiana Jones ride?
Sure. You're on the Indiana Jones ride that never works. It's always broken every time you're there. And you're on rails, right? Like you're viewing the story, but there's no time to stop and explore anything. You're literally in a vehicle that's driving you through the ride. The action's happening around you. There's no time to contemplate why or how I got here or what it is. This is an on the rails action set piece where there's no time to look around and wonder. This doesn't give you room to breathe or room to contemplate or room to think about the reasons of anybody's actions. You're pulled along by the gravity and momentum of this story. There's not a lot of time to think about it. You know, like that's what
I think that, I think that works. And I think that works in a book like this. And like, the process of reading this book was so quick that it's so small in comparison to time that you're like, oh, it doesn't set up. Like, I guess it could go on and tell a bigger story, but there is a benefit to having just you can read this in one sitting. It's a world you're dropped into. It's like you said, on the rails or watching the action long, Josh. I think as when it comes to genre movies like that, there has to be, I think for me, a scene where I have never seen anyone do that in the medium before. Like I haven't seen the new the Mission Impossible movie, but everyone keeps saying like, but there is an action scene in there that might be one of the best action scenes of all time. Right. I'm not saying that like comic book has to like, that it has to be the best of something, but I'm saying like, if I'm gonna read 160 pages of a comic book, that's not creating a world that I'm going to live in for multiple, multiple volumes, then in that 160 pages, give me a scene where I'm like, oh, I've never seen that before. And I think there were a couple that either hit that or come close to it. One is the shocking of like, you know, the shocking machine, how are we showing escapes happen within comic book panels? So I think when it comes to like, oh, how are we going to show I'm trapped and now I'm not trapped in my challenge is, let me show that in as few panels as possible, but still make it understandable and exciting.
And I think that that's what this book does really well. It keeps an exciting pace. And so many things happen quickly in this book. Like, we didn't even talk about the part where she's tripping out and like killing people while she's basically like having a fever dream on this poison. Right.
Yeah.
That's a whole section. There's a whole section where she's like, there's on a train, a fight on a train, like all she's on the motorcycle. We didn't even talk about how like, the reason the governor wants to kill her now is because she stole the governor's motorcycle in her escape scene, right? That felt very Mad Max. Or very, very...
Like a toy. Very, like this,
Escape from New York. The
Despot has like a nostalgia towards a certain memorabilia, and that trumps everything.
Yeah.
Oh, lots of words in that statement.
I'd love it. I like that.
Despot, okay. Trump. I got like weird
let's things. Let's jump on the art really quick to wrap up our conversation, because I don't know that we're going to say too much more about the thing is, this is not a story to spoil, right?
Like, nor is it one that needs to be unraveled.
No. And I think that that's kind of the interest. That's kind of the momentum of it. It really is just this vengeance tale. So let's talk about the art. That was my whole reason to read this thing. You and I were out. You were in the States. We went to some comic shops. This was out. I opened it up and I was like, oh, that looks really pretty. That looks like a good one. I read the sample and I was like, okay, this is gorgeous. I don't even care what happens. It looks great. What was your overall take on the art in this?
Well, I mean, it falls into that area of art that we really love, where it's not necessarily sketchy per se, but it's not house. The coloring is great. But in particular for me, Samelin, I believe is the artist's name, right? Is that how you said at the beginning?
Sure.
Robert Samelin. Yeah. Samelin does, I always love someone's take on post-apocalyptic character design. And I thought we have a bunch of female biker characters in here, and then they're opposite, right? The very put together uniformed machine people. And I really loved the character, what we call that, illustrations of these bikers. And in fact, it becomes a part of the story where at one point the betraying bikers are put into these machine uniforms,
right?
And they make an argument like, like this is like who we are. And then so that made me, I actually went scroll back and paid attention to what they were wearing as a way to kind of figure out, oh, if this is who they are, then maybe that's where the characterization is. Maybe I need to pay a little bit more attention to the details and what they're wearing to understand how these six or seven women are different from each other and what they care about and what their strengths are and stuff like that. And so even Callie herself with the bone t-shirt, it's like an old Halloween costume, like something you would find at Savers. And she cuts the collar down. It's the skeleton thing on there. I thought that stuff was really cool in the art.
It is very, I mean, it's again, it's very Furiosa. It's very Mad Max. It's very Tank Girl.
Karate Kid during Halloween when all those bad boys are dressed up like skeletons.
I think one of the things that I really enjoyed is in the back of this is all the back matter where you can see all of his thumbnail sketches of pages and then a breakdown of each of the biker characters, like just a sketch of them. And then it really goes through that sequence that I talked about early on, the getting the knife, stabbing the guard, killing the guy who's got her in prison. You can see his layout as he's writing it. And he writes it very specifically. Page 8, 9 panels. Panel 1, close up. Callie's cuffed hand catches the falling knife. Panel 2, Callie stabs the guard in the gut with her cuffed hands, right? And so he's breaking it down very specifically what he wants this to look like. And again, I can see how a writer, how this writer very much is able to dictate time in those moments. I want this Watchmen panel format so I can slow down time to show each beat of the battle or the fight scene take place. And then I'll speed it up on the next page, right? It'll be less panels and we'll see those moments. The art was great. The coloring was fantastic. It is this sort of like thin sketching it, like thin.
Wispy, yeah.
Wispy inking. The colors, you know, we love a good barbecue color. The end battle scene as well, there's been an explosion, so there's flame, so it's the color wash on everything is this
pain,
sort of,
emotive pain is done well in the characters' faces as well.
Right, we get to see Callie start as this sort of like, yeah, she's got a knife in her back, but at the end, she's like been headbutted, she's bloody, she's beaten, her teeth are broken, and so you get to see this. He does ugly very well. Mm-hmm. And this sort of like lithe, like sexy violence,
very
well throughout, right? A hell of a ride. It was. I mean, for what it is, it's the same reason you watch Escape from New York. It's the same reason you would watch a John Wick movie. You're not watching it for great characterization or Keanu Reeves delivering the best monologue, Oscar-worthy performance. You're watching it because you want to see him roll down 16 flights of stairs and then break some dude's leg and pop him twice in the head, right? Like, that's what this is about.
This is I'll kind of leave this hanging here as we go into next episode. When it comes to genre and like genre heads like us, at some point you've watched all the major tentpole stuff, you've read all the major tentpole stuff, right? So aside from watching it again and again, you are looking for offbeat independent takes on that genre, and that's what this feels like. This isn't someone who I would give to someone who hasn't been exposed to the female vengeance post-apocalyptic genre. There are pieces in film or books or comics that I would give before this, but anyone who loves this, who hasn't read it, I'm like, have you checked out, I know you're a big fan of this type of genre, have you checked out Callie? Because it hits all the buttons.
Yeah, and I think that this is a thing where I think the reason why I enjoyed it is because you don't see this a lot in comics. Right. Like this is not a normal comic book trope. I mean, vengeance is, but usually there's like they try to give you much more of a backstory as opposed to like,
it's dumping like 9 volumes. This is
a graphic novel. I'm throwing you in beginning to end. Let's tell this very visual story. And this is a great medium for visuals. So yeah. I enjoyed it. It's not going to be something I'm going to think about for a long time afterwards, but it was a good ride. Right. I don't know how it was a good ride.
Went down easy.
Yeah. All right. So, folks, thanks for tuning in. Next up on the podcast is what the heck is the name? I keep saying the name of the book.
If you're reading this, I'm gone or
I'm already dead. If you find this, I'm already dead. Another Dark Horse book. We've got two Dark Horse female protagonist books that were with a ton of
Dark September.
with a ton of back matter in both books. So very genre heavy in September. Next book will be if you find this, I'm already dead. Thank you for tuning in. You can find the podcast at comicexposure.com. Follow us, like us, rate us, review us on your favorite podcast app. Tell your mom, your grandma, your best friend about us. And we'll see you next trade.